Hi, welcome back to the Evidence-Based Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Renner, board certified in internal medicine and radiology, served as chairman of the Department of Radiology at Ohio GI and Liver Institute, with Dr. Alan Safdie, board certified in internal medicine, nutrition, gastroenterology, and chief medical officer at Quadrant Health Company, owned by Mayo Clinic and Stanford University. Today, we're going to talk about something that affects nearly 80% of middle-aged adults: high blood pressure. When I was in training, we didn't start treating blood pressure until the patient consistently had a blood pressure of 150 or over 100 or even higher. 140 over 90 didn't always trigger therapy, and lifestyle guidance usually was minimal. Today, we know much better. We have decades of stronger data, longer follow-up, and more precise risk calculations. Alan, tell me about the new guidelines.
Bill, when you were in training, I'm surprised they had a blood pressure cuff.
Remember, we were together, right?
Let's go through the numbers first. The systolic is the first number. It's the top number, the upper number you see. Diastolic is the lower number you see. And Bill's right. We often did not treat people very aggressively decades ago in regards to hypertension, but we realize now the sequelae of hypertension, the problems that untreated blood pressure can cause, including heart attacks, strokes, and other cardiovascular problems that we discussed on a previous podcast. So normal, what's a normal blood pressure? Systolic, the top number, less than 120. Most people we see are not less than 120. The lower number, less than 80. Elevated would be 120 to 129. Still, we talk to people about lifestyle changes at elevated. Then the diastolic, the lower numbers, less than 80. So say it's 128 over 80. We're still thinking that's an elevated blood pressure. Stage one hypertension is 130 or greater, up to 139, and then diastolic's 80 to 89. And then we go through different stages of hypertension, like 140 or higher on the top number, 180 or higher, where it'd be severe hypertension, the lower number being 120 for severe hypertension. So these levels have come way down where we aggressively treat. These guidance, help doctors, help patients start lower, take and try to get the blood pressure lower sooner, before we have end organ damage. And nowadays, we don't go slow and go. We actually try to treat the blood pressure very aggressively early on.
All right, Alan. One thing I do want to talk about is something that's recent, is the risk and the link of high blood pressure and dementia. Tell me about that, because that's really important to me. That's the one disease that I'm scared to death of, dementia.
I'm glad you remember that. Target organ damage, and that's what we're talking about. Hypertension is not just damage to our heart, but our kidneys, our brain, our eyes. And every 1 millimeter reduction in systolic blood pressure translates to about a 2% relative risk reduction, which is huge in regards to cardiovascular events. So for every 10 millimeter reduction in there, we have a significant decrease in coronary heart disease, stroke, heart failure, cardiovascular events. But what about our brain? So new research really shows that hypertension affects, what's it affect in the brain? The blood vessels that supply your brain. Your brain uses a tremendous amount of blood and energy. And when we affect those blood fractures, blood vessels, that type of injury is linked to cognitive decline, meaning you don't think as well, and memory problems. So cognitive decline or memory problems can be a long-term side effect or effect of uncontrolled blood pressure. So it's really important to keep the blood pressure controlled well. Reducing your blood pressure can actually reduce your risk of dementia. And there's different types of a dementia. There's over 100 types of dementia, but vascular dementia by over 15%.
Very, very good point. Let's talk about the foundation of reducing your blood pressure. What are the cornerstones of therapy?
Well, before discussing, let me just mention something called the PREVENT calculator. I don't know if any of you used that. It's a PREVENT risk calculator. and it provides the doctors and the patient insights and, you know, treating you. And it takes into account age, your blood pressure, your cholesterol levels, your sex, and other health indicators, including your zip code, because pollution.
Where do you find that?
You can go online. It's PREVENT, risk calculator. And it's accurate for people between the ages of 30 and 79. And I have done mine a few times just as out of curiosity. And it's a personalized number that I can discuss with my patients. We can explain their specific 10-year and 30-year risk factors that go along with that. So that's one of the things in your self-care that we're going to give you that I would recommend. The other self-care things are eat a healthy diet. You know, take a look at your family history and discuss that with your doctors. But healthy diet, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, the DASH diet, which is a diet actually developed to help control your blood pressure. Exercise. Exercise lowers your blood glucose as you exercise, but also lowers your blood pressures. And get an at-home monitor. I think there's, you know, a lot of people go into the office and they're nervous and their blood pressures are higher because they're nervous in the office. At-home monitoring allows you, and you write down the results, allows your doctor to track your daily blood pressures and find one, choose a monitor that's validated by the American Medical Association or some sort of other validation processing.
Tell me about salt.
Salt is really a huge problem in the United States. I mean, the average patient that we see takes in 4,000 milligrams or 4 grams to 5 grams or higher. A lot of foods that taste good to us are salty. And, you know, I do not like my patients to have a salt shaker in the house, but definitely not on the dinner table. Canned foods.
Well, what do you think about the salt substitutes?
Salt substitutes may be fine. You know, those are potassium chloride, and low potassium diets are, you know, ubiquitous in the United States. But I think if you can add more potassium and you do it through a salt substitute and you tell your doctor that you're using one because they need to see what your serum potassium is, because if you're starting off with serum potassium of 5 because some of your medications, we would not tell people to use a salt substitute. But the key is really getting your salt down to a reasonable level.
And things that are high in salt, soups, what else?
Chips, most of the things that come in a package like that, even if you buy peanuts. I mean, it takes me a while to find unsalted peanuts because I eat peanuts every day. Low-salted pistachios, you have to search those out. So, you know, your daily salt intake, we'd really want less than about 2,300 milligrams per day. That's about 1 teaspoon. And in some patients, with a goal to actually try to limit yourself to 1,500 milligrams of sodium per day, which, you know, mine for the most part is less than that. But maintaining the lower salt diet, exercising, limit your alcohol intake, you know, be very careful. There's probably no true safe amount of alcohol, and maintaining a healthy weight in regards to hypertension is really important. So we've discussed a variety of risk factors. As you mentioned before, salt, you know, you can get 5 grams, 6 grams of sodium by just eating a lot of prepared foods, you know, the old-fashioned TV dinners.
Yeah, and also what we all call junk food, right? Very high in salt.
Yeah, you won't find a lot of salt in your broccoli, your cauliflower, you know, a can of beans unless it's already salted, but I get mine in a package. So we have lots of beans and legumes and things like that.
Alan, high blood pressure is common, but is it inevitable?
No, it's absolutely, it's very common. It's one of the most common diseases that we see, but it's definitely not inevitable. We talk to people about lifestyle. Same with cardiovascular disease. We talk to them about all the risk factors that go into it, and then we talk to them about, they just think, well, it might affect my heart. It does. It's, you know, as we mentioned in a previous podcast, that, you know, 90-something percent of cardiovascular disease patients have a preventable risk factor, one of the top 4 preventable risk factors. And remember that, high blood pressure doesn't just affect your heart. It can cause kidney damage, significant kidney damage. It can cause brain damage, as we discussed. It can damage your eyes. It can damage your peripheral vascular system, so you have claudication or pain when you walk in your legs. So, you know, being aggressive is very good.
And remember, you need to have your blood pressure checked. We used to call it the silent killer. I still think that applies. I still think that term applies.
Good point, Bill. And, you know, everybody, you know, make sure that you try to keep your blood pressure in normal range. And remember, a lot of doctors still are not aggressive enough in treating high blood pressure according to these new recommendations.
Thank you, Alan. Another great podcast. Now, if you like these evidence-based podcasts, please subscribe to our channel and please let your friends know.
Thank you. Have a good day, Bill.